Welcome in to the Blue Ribbon College Basketball Podcast. It's our special NCAA Tournament Spectacular as we get ready for the big dance. Alongside Chris Dorch, I'm Kevin Ingerman. It's always great to have you with us. We'll preview some games in the tournament. We'll talk about our brackets, which I know everybody wants to hear. We're going to give you some double-digit winners. We're going to talk about teams saying no to the NIT. Of course, some coaching moves going on and just a lot happening around college basketball. Chris, how are you, man?
Oh, man, I'm just as excited as I can be, and I'm just as confused as I can be. There's so much going on that you can't keep up with it all. I was just lucky to fill out a bracket, but I'll tell you what, I went big on the double-digit seeds. Every year I kick myself. I say, dang, why couldn't I have forecast, one of those teams, St. Peter's or Fairleigh Dickinson? You just should have taking a risk and stepped out on a limb and whatever cliche you want to use and have the guts to pick those. This year, I won't have that problem.
Your bracket will be in the trash after one day, but you picked all the double-digit seeds.
It could be in the trash very quickly, but I can live with that.
Yeah.
I can live with that because, I think this year has proven that we talk about it every year about parity, but you give some of these teams semi-equal footing. Now, granted, anybody that plays, let's say, for example, this is not what's happening, but let's say anybody that plays North Carolina and Charlotte, that ain't equal footing. But if you give somebody anywhere near equal footing, and you saw this a bunch of times with Belmont, especially that legendary game against Duke, if you give somebody a good mid-major team that is well-coached, anywhere near equal footing, they're going to have a chance. And that's what makes this tournament so great. And I know we're going to talk about that later, about what SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey said regarding, is it going to become an all-power conference tournament? I really, really hope not, because the fact that McNeese could clean some clocks – in this thing, it excites me. It does.
and the smaller conference teams and the big upsets and those things, that's part of the charm of the tournament. That's what makes it so great, is you see all these games these first couple days and teams just come out of nowhere. Now, I picked, looking through my bracket here, I picked 7 double-digit seeds to win first round games. And you look at them in some of the matchups, it wouldn't necessarily be that big of an upset, because some of those 7 that I picked are power conference teams. I'll just go through them real quick.
Right.
I picked Duquesne to beat BYU, and that's sort of the sentimental pick because Duquesne's coach is going to retire when they're done. And
yeah,
this is the first time they've been in the tournament since 1977, so I picked the Dukes to pull the upset there. I picked Drake, which is a 10 seed, to beat Washington State. I've seen Drake play a few times. They play in the Missouri Valley. And Washington State's had a terrific year. They're a really good team, but I picked Drake in that one. Now, New Mexico, I picked New Mexico to win 2 games. I picked them to beat Clemson, and I picked them to knock out Baylor. I think that team's really good with Richard Pitino as head coach. Nevada, I picked them to beat Dayton. I don't know that that's all that big of an upset, a 7-10 matchup there. Over on the other side, James Madison's had a fantastic season. I would not be surprised if they beat the team from Madison, the Wisconsin Badgers. NC State and Texas Tech, to me, those teams are fairly even. Vanderbilt played both. Played NC State out in Las Vegas earlier in the year and played Texas Tech in a game in Fort Worth. I picked NC State to win that one. They got hot and won the ACC. And then I picked my alma mater, stand up and cheer for dear old Western. I picked the Hilltoppers to knock out Marquette in what I called loosely the Tom Crean Bowl, because he, of course, has connections to both those places. But I picked the 15th-seeded Hilltoppers in a 15-2 upset of Marquette. So those are the 7 that I picked to advance.
Wow, dude, you went buck wild. You look like a wimp.
Oh, go big or go home, man.
Yeah, you make me look like a wimp. Let me tell you a couple of the ones I picked. I watched UAB win the American Athletic Conference, and Andy Kennedy has some dudes.
He does.
He's got some dudes, including the big guy they got from junior college. They have 4 junior college players, 2 of whom were huge factors in that game, but they've got a guy that's averaging a double-double. He's a monster. I've got them as a 12 seed over San Diego State as a 5. So there's that. I agree with you about Drake over Washington State. So I've got that. Then I couldn't make myself do some of the others you did. But I went over here on the other side of the bracket. I, too, picked James Madison to beat Wisconsin. 12 versus 5. There's always 12 versus 5, so you got to have a couple of them on your dance card.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's see what else. Oh, McNeese over Gonzaga. I watched a tape of Will Wade last year. Now, granted, he was high on life after having resuscitated his career from the trash.
I was going to say, there's quite a bit of tape on Will Wade from over the years.
Exactly. Some of it he didn't want out.
Right.
But but he said at the podium when he got hired at McNeese, he said, I can't wait to get started on the biggest turnaround in the country next year. We lost 23. We're going to win 23. Well, it turns out he miscalculated. They won 30. And these cats are all over you like white on rice. As one of my favorite blues artists, Muddy Waters, used to sing, white on rice. But they guard you. They press you. They trap you. And Gonzaga, you know, they got a 5 seed. They rallied down the stretch, beat Kentucky and Lexington. I know all that. But McNeese are like a bunch of hungry sharks in a feeding frenzy. And Will can pump up his dudes. So I like that. And then in that very same bracket, Kansas is beat up, man. They look like they've been in a prize fight, like all of them. And if they don't have if they don't have the big man and Kevin McCullough, Hunter Dickinson and McCullough, like 100%, Samford, whom I've seen live and on TV a lot, could take them out. They too like to press and shoot threes. And they really get after the ball handler. They just make you very uncomfortable to get into what you want to try to do. So in an improbable round of 32, I've got McNeese versus Samford.
All right.
If that goes down, of course, I'm not a betting man, but if that goes down, if that happens, my pride will skyrocket.
I think those are some pretty solid picks. I mean, we're not just like throwing stuff at a dartboard here, man. I mean, we got mountains of information at our fingertips that we're using to make these selections. Now,
sometimes you got too much info.
That is absolutely true.
I'll never, ever bring myself in a million years would have picked what St. Peter's and Fairleigh Dickinson did.
No,
not
and you couldn't
in
have.
A million years.
No.
You know, we make our living covering the game. You just can't do that.
Right.
But like I said, and you know, my hat is off to you. You have thrashed me on the double digit picks, but I just got to, you know, I had to go with a few.
Chris, I'm getting word in that I was wrong. I did not pick 7 double digit seeds. I picked 8. I missed one here. I picked 11-seeded Oregon to beat South Carolina and to also beat Creighton in the second round. So give me the Ducks for a couple wins.
Whoa.
There. Add that one on.
You know, that's not a bad pick. That's not a bad pick at all. I think Jay Billis went with Oregon. He picked – his stuff is so funny because he's a brilliant dude, and he acts the shtick like, you know – I'll give you my advice and you'll thank me later type
right,
thing.
Right.
He's not that way at all. He's a good dude. So I'll take his little braggadocious writing because I know it's just in fun. But I think he's got Oregon. You know, South Carolina, I don't know. A bunch of people were high on South Carolina and then they lost at home to Tennessee. And then lost in the SEC tournament. And I think people kind of got off that bandwagon a little bit, but Oregon comes in and you know, when I always tell this to people that ask, you know, if you're picking a bracket, you need to look and give some consideration to teams that got hot at the right time, and Oregon certainly qualifies. So and the very last, Bill Walton is in his teepee right now, weeping over
the end of the Pac-12. The conference
is no more.
But as he's doing it, he's reading Blue Ribbon also in the teepee
and
listening to the Grateful Dead.
He definitely has a picture of to that effect on his Twitter, if he still uses Twitter. I have not heard anything from Bill. He must have immediately resigned his position after after all those moves. He was not a happy camper about UCLA leaving the Pac-12 for the Big Ten. And I don't know. He might stop giving money. I don't know.
There you have it, our double-digit winners. And I was kind of joking about using mountains of information because I did not use mountains of information to make these picks. It was a whole lot about the eyeball test. And a little bit of emotion with my alma mater. I'm so happy to see Western get back in the tournament for the first time in a decade. That was cool. Watched them on TV the other night to win the Conference USA Championship. There's a few upsets for you. You can take them or leave them, but we'll see how we do. Let's do our biggest gripes with the tournament bracket. And my biggest one was with Indiana State being left out. And if the net really is important, then how can a team that was rated 29 not get in? And yeah, they gave us a lot of blah, blah, blah about bid stealers and all that. To me, I thought they could have found a spot for the Sycamores. I thought Gonzaga getting a 5 was interesting. I thought Iowa State landing in the same region as UConn was also interesting, which means that they weren't the highest of the two seeds. Give me a couple of gripes that you had or just thought things that you thought that were interesting with this year's bracket.
Well, I thought this was interesting. You mentioned the bid stealers. There were 5 bid stealers as opposed to 3 combined the last 2 seasons. And we're talking NC State, Oregon, New Mexico, Duquesne, and FAU by losing. So those are your bid stealers. And then you've got some teams that felt a little slighted. The one that I felt like they should have made some move to get in there was Indiana State. I just feel like they play an entertaining brand of basketball, and had they been given the chance, they might have racked up that bracket a little bit, messed it up. I would my buddy Brendan Quinn, who writes for The Athletic, he had a great tweet. He said he would rather watch Indiana State's players park cars than watch Virginia play a basketball game. and Virginia struggles to get to 50, you know? So, hey, I love Tony Bennett. I love his program. He stands for everything that is good and right with the world. He's a prince of a dude. But I'd have picked Indiana State, man. But the ones that are griping, Oklahoma bummed out. All right, so as our buddy Joe Lenardi writes, don't go 4-12 in quad one or 2-12 against quad one tournament teams. Seton Hall, don't lose in the first round of the conference tournament with a net in the 60s. Pitt, the next bubble team to make it with a number 343 non-conference schedule will be the first.
I saw some of those comments, and there's always the flip side of not getting in. There are reasons these teams don't make it, for sure.
Yeah, and I saw a very, very well-regarded basketball writer tweet that instead of worrying about expansion, they should worry about the net, because she'd heard all kinds of comments, negative comments about the net. And here's the deal about the net. It is a tool. It's not the tool for determining tournament worthiness. So over the years, I've had many friends who have served on the committee. And ultimately, what they say is this. It comes down to a human element. If you were a coach, what team would you least want to play? And if I were in that room and it's okay, boys, Indiana State versus Virginia, I'm saying Indiana State's the team I would least want to play. And I, that means they got my vote to get in. So, you know, there's a human element to it. I mean, it's like I've told my writing students about AI. I don't want you using AI. And if I catch you, I'm going to run you off because it will show me you've got no soul. So if you just pick a tournament bracket on cold, hard, advanced analytics, it's got no soul. And Indiana State would have brought soul to this gig, I'm telling you.
They also make some interesting matchups for TV, and my wife laughs at all my conspiracy theories. You know, I'm not a big conspiracy theory guy when it comes to most things, but when it comes to tournament brackets, I turn into Oliver Stone all of a sudden. But how else do you explain the potential for a Tennessee-Texas second-round matchup?
The
Rick Barnes Bowl, 100%. And if Providence had made it, they could have just added them, too, and thrown them in there. So
And Clemson, might as well put Clemson in
right.
there.
Well,
you know, in the same bracket.
when we used to do the morning show, I would go through this whole shtick every year, and I'd go through these matchups and talk about how the whole thing's designed to get a Kentucky Duke regional final, which is in play this year in the South region. And Mark Howard used to tell me that I knew too much about all this stuff, that nobody thought it through like I did. But I don't know. I think some of these matchups or potential matchups anyway, they want to get the best games that they can for TV,
and that's fine, but sometimes
I'd like to hear somebody say that that was the case, and I'd be more okay
just
with
fess
it
up to it.
Right, exactly.
You know, this was great this was great TV. I asked Joe Lenardi about it, and he knows this better than anyone. The hoops that the NCAA has to do, the rules that they have in place to put these matchups, and sometimes it just works out that way. I'm still not buying it on the Rick Barnes Bowl, but sometimes it just works out that way.
And then sometimes Texas A&M and Nebraska get matched up against each other in both the men's and women's tournament. So
exactly. Yeah. What's going on?
Or an athletic director just changed addresses.
I think those committees were trading notes back and forth.
Teams saying no to the NIT. That's been a topic of conversation. ESPN's Tom Crean was outspoken, saying the teams should take the bids and allow the players to keep going. Chris, I'll get your take on this in a minute. My thought on this, and I've been to a number of NITs over the years, including I've called 6 NIT games in just the last 2 seasons. I just think every situation is different, and I think schools can do what they want. North Carolina said, hey, we're done last season. Hubert Davis says we're not going to the NIT. Rick Pitino and St. John's, they turned it down this year. I don't know. Maybe you make a rule that if you've played in the NIT in, say, the last X number of years, you can say no or something like that. But to me, if you want to say no and don't want to go, then whatever. And it opens up a spot for somebody else in a tournament that it's fun. If you get in it and your team's really invested in playing and you want to keep your season going, win some more basketball games, get players to more experience, especially in the postseason of the season, it's cool. With Vanderbilt, we've seen some really exciting games. We had some really fun wins the last couple of years. That game against Michigan last year was awesome. But to me, they've taken some of the fun part out of it, too. And that was going to play the semifinals in the championship game at Madison Square Garden. That, to me, was always the carrot that was out there. The reward for winning 3 games was to go to the Garden and play in New York, and that's not part of it anymore. They played in Las Vegas last year. I think this year it's at Hinkle Fieldhouse in Indy. I don't know what your take is on this, but to me, I think if teams want to say no to the NIT, then just move on down the line, and you'll find somebody who wants to play.
Yeah, you're right about that. I'll give you a philosophy from an old friend and a great coach of mine, an old friend of mine and a great coach, Dave Odom. And I get North Carolina last year because they were the preseason number one. They had gotten to the Final Four, the championship game the previous year. And they completely laid an egg last year. They were done. You know, they wanted to go to spring break. I get that. But this year we got St. John's, Oklahoma, Pitt. They all declined invites to the NIT. That's okay. That's what you want to do. That's fine. But Dave Odom, on the other hand, had a different philosophy, and it really worked well for him. He said, look, we're still one of the, and then this was in the days before all the alphabet soup tournaments that you can get, pay your way into. But he said at this point, you know, we're still one of the, I don't know, 90 some odd teams still left. There's merit to that. And you should treat this like a reward. So he coached his players that way. He encouraged his players that way. So Dave Odom won 3 NIT titles. You might say, well, that's a big deal. No big deal. I think it's a pretty daggone good deal. 2000, he went with Wake. 05 and 06 back-to-back with South Carolina because he encouraged it. Playing is a good thing. You know, preparing yourself for the next season, he believes is a good thing. And, you know, the critic might say, well, they won it in 05, the NIT. How well did it prepare them in 06 if they had to go back to the NIT?
Yeah.
Or they won it again? I don't know. But there's a mindset to it. And I'm like this, glass half full, glass half empty. My glass is eternally full. And that's just my makeup. And so if I'm offered a chance as a head coach to keep on playing, and I don't have to buy my way in like some of these lesser tournaments, I'm there, dude. You know, I want to play. But if, I don't know, if you put it to the vote and you're a Democratic small D leader, and you let the players decide. And maybe the players said, you know what? We're mad about this snub with the NCAA. To heck with it. Because the NIT is run by the NCAA now, so we're going to stick it back to them. But I don't know. I just think that players play, you know? Players should want to play.
And you get what you put into it also if you do go and play in the NIT. If your team is interested and invested, then it's going to be fun. You're going to win
Dave
some games.
Odom said, we're in it to win it,
yeah,
baby.
But if you're not, you know, if your guys are still mad that they didn't make the other tournament, then you might as well not even be in there because
how many times have you seen a team snubbed and they get in and they get bounced in the first round?
Right.
Maybe that's what St. John's, Oklahoma, and Pitt were concerned about. I don't know. But Dave played it smart, Dave Odom. He just said, guys, we're still fighting. We're still one of the few teams that are still playing. Let's go win this daggone thing. Go to New York, you know, kick it a little bit. Get some genuine Italian food. See a Broadway. I don't know. But and they did all that, and he gets 3 trophies. You know, he's 81, and he's still running the Maui Classic. That's one of my dudes right there.
Yeah, he always
he's
seemed like a
man.
Great guy.
He's a good man.
I think I've met him somewhere along the way. A quick story about the NIT. Vanderbilt, we were playing at Xavier 2 seasons ago in the quarterfinal game, and if we won, it was the last year they played the semis and the championship at Madison Square Garden. So if Vanderbilt had won, we were on our way to New York. So before the game, Tim Thompson and I were all excited. We were thinking, you know, man, we got a shot here. I mean, this is going to be a tough game playing Xavier, but we got a real chance to go to New York. So we got online, and Tim made us a reservation at Carmine's, the famous Italian place in New York. And we had it all set up, man. We were going to...
You got to be prepared.
We were going to go to Carmine's and eat, and then the game didn't go our way, and then we had to go back online and, you know, do the walk of shame and,
you know,
and cancel
what
our
it
reservation.
Is. He put the black cat on him.
Yeah, we were
soon as he picked up that phone to make the reservation, yeah, you guys were doomed.
Yeah, as soon as we hit send on the reservation, it was on us. But the good news to this story is we did get to eat at Carmine's, but it was in Las Vegas. We went there when we were out there this past fall. And I'll tell you what, if you like Italian food, let me tell you, that's as good as it gets right there.
You're going to dig
awesome.
Carmine's.
No question. A couple other things. The transfer portal has opened its doors, and there are several hundred names in there as of this morning. And it's headed north of 1,000 in the next few days. You know it is, especially as teams start to get knocked out of the tournament. One question I had is, would they be better off of waiting until after the tournament's over to open up the portal, or does it really make any difference?
Well, I saw one pretty well-regarded writer posit that they should let the NCAA be in the spotlight. I didn't posit back, but I say you're not taking the spotlight from the NCAA. I don't care what you're doing. And furthermore, if you count the NIT, but 300 schools need help. So they're looking in the portal. And trust me, I know this. I exchanged some texts with some coaches yesterday, assistants who are in the tournament. They're not sleeping on recruiting. They can walk and chew gum. I don't think for me the portal is going to overshadow the NCAA tournament. Nothing ever will. As long as I live, it's my favorite sporting event. You could say maybe push it back, but how long do you push it back? With the portal, I believe that they need all the time they can get. And don't forget, the portal closes a month earlier this year. It was all the way back in July after the COVID year. I guess it was in June this year. Now it's May 15th.
Okay.
So they need to get, they don't like this speed dating stuff, as a lot of the coaches call it. They want to go in there. They want to try to make good decisions and take good players, you know, kind of like Florida did, kind of like Tennessee did when they nabbed Dalton Knecht for a very specific reason. They needed a guy who could take over games offensively. Florida was looking for some bigs. They needed a guard that could handle the point. And, man, I'll tell you what, Todd Golden, he's an analytics guru. He used analytics, and he got the dudes he needed. And they had a good year. And, oh, man, I'm glad I wasn't at the final to see Micah Hanlogan's Logan's injury. I heard it was pretty gruesome, but I hope that injury, I hope he can recover and play again next year as soon as the season begins. And I hope Florida can overcome that loss in the NCAAs.
Yeah, for sure. I wanted to mention that too. Best wishes to Micah Hanlogan. As you said, he broke his leg in the SEC championship game. They had to carry him off on a stretcher that was in the first half of the game. He had surgery in Vanderbilt just the last couple days. So here's to a speedy recovery to Micah. Saw him play in person a couple times this season. Just a guy who's a good inside player, rim protector, and those things, rebounder. Yeah, good luck to him.
Blue collar guy.
For sure. And boy, you hate to see those type of injuries to anybody, but it always feels like those big guys, they always struggle with their lower legs and feet. And, man, you just hope he can have a recovery. Saw the same thing last year with Liam Robbins, who played for Vanderbilt. He broke his leg in a game against Kentucky in Lexington. And it's taken him a long time to get well. He had the surgery, but still some of the after effects of it are still affecting him. So, yeah, all the best to Micah Hanlock. And here's to a speedy recovery and back ready to go by the time next season gets here. Coaching moves with seasons ending. I've seen a few of those, too, including where I work at Vanderbilt with Vanderbilt and Jerry Stackhouse parting ways. Coach has been great to me. I love Coach Stackhouse. I consider him a friend. I wish him and his assistants and all the support staff all the best going forward. Again, they've been terrific to me. I'm sorry that it didn't work out at Vanderbilt, but I've made some friends that I will continue to be friends with, and I wish Coach Stackhouse the best. It's an attractive job. The practice facility should be ready by next season, so it'll be interesting to see who the next coach of the Commodores will be. Interesting, too, that Chris Holtman quickly landed at DePaul, and also that Jake Diebler got the permanent job at Ohio State. Chris, that never happens. They had a great finish to the season, but you hardly ever see the person that was the interim coach after the previous coach got fired end up being the one that's going to get that job permanently for the next season.
Yeah, you know, I noticed it. I watched the Purdue game right after Chris got fired. Jake took over and they beat Purdue, and you could just look at Jake and see that he belonged. And sure enough, he comes from one of the best high school or one of the best basketball families in the state of Ohio, right up there with the Sullingers. And his experience and being the son of a coach, I just think he was ready. It was a bold move, but I think it'll pay off. As for Coach Holtman, God help him. The DePaul gig in the Big East, even though the Big East got snubbed and only got, three bids, it's still a bone crusher of a league. And that is the worst job in the league. And in order for DePaul to rise again, you're going to have to be able to recruit the city of Chicago. And that, my friend, is dog eat dog. It was before NIL, and it continues to be after NIL. only now it's just legal. One of his first moves, he's going to have to get some guys that know that city and can keep, you know, Illinois. I'm from Illinois. You can build a championship, not a championship necessarily, but an NCAA perennial program by getting not even, you know, somewhere in the low top 20s
sure.
kids from Illinois every year. It's that talent rich. So he's going to have to recruit Chicago and really try to keep the better players at home. He's not going to get the big ones, the ones that are going to go to Purdue and Indiana and Michigan State. But if he can get, like I said, you know, 10 through 20 of the top 20, you know, a couple of dudes in that range, I think he'll be all right. He's a good coach, a good guy. I hated to see him get gone at Ohio State, but I like that move of hiring Jake Diebler. I think it was bold, and I think it was smart.
Long Beach State fired Dan Monson, and they kept on winning. They made the tournament. How about that? I thought that was really interesting that it's like, well, I might not have a job after this week, but I'm still coaching. I'm in the dance.
He had a great quote to somebody at The Athletic. I guess must have called him on his cell phone. He says, I guess you could say I'm in the middle of nowhere in a lot of respects. They were driving through Barstow, California. And if you remember the Hunter S. Thompson film where they were driving through Barstow when the drugs took hold, that was Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. But anyway, they were driving through Barstow. I don't think any drugs took hold, but he had this great quote. He said, I'm in a desert in my car and in my career. That's a great line.
Yeah, that is a great line.
You know, people forget he's the one who started the Gonzaga dynasty. And Mark Few learned a lesson from him. He rode Gonzaga's success to a mediocre power conference job in Minnesota, got fired. And then, as he said, kind of went into the wilderness, did a good job for 17 years at Long Beach State. But Mark Few has steadfastly refused all jobs, knowing that he has turned Gonzaga into as good a job as any in the country. One other hiring I wanted to note, Nate Oates cannot catch a break. Last year, he lost all three assistants to head coaching jobs. This year, one of those replacements that he hired, Austin Klontsch, who was a head coach, hired him from Nichols. And after less than a year on the job, Austin has gone back to UTSA, Texas San Antonio, for those who don't want to call them what the school wants to be called. But now Renate has already lost another assistant. So that's the high price of success, I guess.
Yeah, that your assistants find other jobs. And I guess you can look at it that it's a good thing if people want the people on your staff. That means you're hiring good people.
Absolutely.
We've had a lot of fear and loathing about the potential for NCAA tournament expansion. And Greg Sankey made some comments this week about that sort of thing. I know he's raised some eyebrows. What did you think about what he said and where all this might go forward?
Well, there was a story I read that sort of was contradictory. The lead said that he didn't envision a future in which the national championship tournament includes only teams from power conferences. But the final graph said there are great stories, and we certainly want to respect those great stories, but things continue to change. So it's like, yeah, but that worries me. It does. And I'll tell you what, I'm just going to tell you right now. This is the goose that laid the golden egg, the NCAA tournament. If they mess with it, they're stupid and it will be unforgivable. And yeah, like Jay Billis once told me, Chris, you know, you'd watch a power conference NCAA. I would, but they're going to ruin the soul of what I think is the best sporting event in the world. Now, soccer fans will be calling and texting, I'm sure, about the World Cup and football fans about the Super Bowl, but don't mess with this great tournament. Come on. But that story to me was totally contradictory from lead paragraph to final paragraph. The same message wasn't there. And, you know, he says, exploration is good. Yeah, it is. But does that mean that you're going to boot the power conference teams? We still don't know. Yeah. So I'm waiting with bated breath. Some people think they should expand to 76. I sounded that off on our buddy, friend of the show, Mike DeCourcy, last night. And he doesn't think they should expand because he thinks the extra bids will still go to power conference teams. I think they should expand with a caveat, and that is equal amount power conference, equal amount mid-major teams, and then make it fair that way. But that's just me.
I'd be fine if they kept it where it is, the 68 teams. To me, it works just right, and it fits all right in the window they want it to fit. So it feels like it's almost inevitable, but hopefully they won't do something that ruins the charm of the tournament. And as we talked about off the top, that's the teams from smaller conferences or double-digit seeds pulling upsets and all those things that you get used to seeing every year. A player from the MAC championship game that we want to give a tip of the cap to say, hang in there, buddy, is Julius Rollins. He was in the Akron-Kent State game. He plays for Kent State. He fouled thinking they were behind at the end of the MAC championship game, and Akron's Greg Tribble hit two free throws with 4 seconds left, and Akron won 62-61 against their rival team. It's not the first time something like that has happened, but you always feel bad for that player. Just had a brain freeze and lost track of where they were in the game and committed that foul thinking they were behind instead of ahead.
You know, I'll never forget the image of that kid on the bench and mouthing the words. You didn't have to be a great lip reader to understand what the F did I do over and over. And that kid will be haunted by it. I only hope he can go on. And their coach was great. Rob Senderoff said, look, if that's the worst thing that ever happened to you, you've led a charmed life. And I hope he can forget about it, but it as you often do with that photographic memory of yours, you came up with a comparison that happened at the very school for which you now call the games. Let's mention that.
Yeah, it was in the tournament a few years back when Vanderbilt was playing Northwestern, and it was a similar situation. The Commodores had a player committed a foul at the end of that game, and that's just a tough deal. Northwestern hit a couple free throws, ended up winning the game. You know, in the heat of the moment, it's easy to, I'm sure, just lose track of where you are, and I just always feel terrible for players to have stuff like that happen to them. You made the quote there a minute ago from the coach, and it reminded me of what John Thompson said after Sleepy Floyd threw the ball away in that 82 championship game against North Carolina. So if that's the worst thing that ever happens to him, then he's going to have a good life ahead.
He's golden.
Yeah.
So you hate to see it, but again, it's like that's why they call it March Madness. That's the allure of championship week. It's the allure of the next 3 weeks. It's you know, gut-wrenching lows and ecstatic highs. You run the gamut and you see the emotion. I use the word soul a lot, maybe more than I should. I use it a lot in my class to my students. You know, do what you do with soul, you know, put a little soul in everything you write. And this tournament has got soul like weaved into its fabric. And that's why people love it. That's why people, you know, more people bet on it, more people fill out brackets in any sport going. It encompasses small town America. I don't know, the emotions of it. If it weren't for those Capital One cards with Spike and the boys and Charles, which run incessantly and drive me crazy. Jen Garner has now joined the fold, and
Jim Nantz.
And oh God. I'll live with those.
I smell divine.
Yeah. Jim Nantz. And he's not even calling the games anymore. Right. He's back in the commercials. Have you seen the one where Charles is a blimp floating in the air?
I have, yes.
Oh, my goodness. we're going to see that a million times But yet, I'll do it 2 million times if I get to see these games. And most particularly, when you and I join up in Phoenix, Arizona, we will be there live. We will see no commercials. We will only see the action of that championship game.
Yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun in a few weeks. Chris, I wrote this a few years ago, and I went and I found it on my phone while you were speaking there a second ago. I wrote this in 2018 about tournament basketball. Fleeting moments of success, fun, and outright joy, bracketed, so to speak, by heavy doses of failure, frustration, and disappointment. And
that's great.
That's
man.
My assessment of tournament basketball, having experienced it in a lot of different ways. But you feel the highs and lows of all of it, especially if you're involved or you have an emotional investment in a team that's playing in it. So it's all going to crank up this week.
That's well written, dude.
No, thank you. By a guy who knows about well-written material, I will say the Hall of Famer himself, Chris Dorch. Let's give our final four picks as we sign off. I'll go first. I had UConn and North Carolina on the left side. I have Kentucky and Tennessee on the right side. I have UConn and Kentucky in the championship. And I'm going to pick the Huskies to do a rare thing, and that's repeat as national champions. I know this is a pretty chalky Final Four, but it's hard really to pick big upsets and teams to make runs because somebody's going to come out of nowhere. It's more than likely not going to be these four teams. It's going to be some teams that nobody expects. But that's what I wrote down on my bracket.
You're right. I went chalk too. I saved my upsets for the early rounds. I've got UConn versus Arizona, Houston versus Purdue, UConn winning it all. Now, there's some caveats there. Houston is banged up. Marquette, I could conceivably, and I may still change this before noon today, could beat Houston in the South. And Tennessee lost to Purdue earlier in the year in Maui. I think it was by 5 points. It was before Connect really got rolling. It was before Zakai Ziegler was healthy. If they can do a better job of defending Zach Edey, and admittedly, in the 9 years Rick Barnes has been there, they haven't had really a physical post guy who could defend physical post guys, and that's their Achilles heel, flat out. Juroš Plavšić, ironically, what was the closest they had to it, and he was a big bruiser that didn't mind trading elbows and barbs with people. But Tennessee could possibly take out Purdue. I agonized with that, but I finally went with Purdue. I do think UConn will win it all again. It's unbelievable how they have come back just as strong. I think getting Tristan Newton back, he didn't turn pro. He made a smart decision. That was a huge deal. And once again, they looked to the portal to fill a certain need, shooting, and got Cam Spencer from Rutgers. And he is a flat-out dude. And then with the development of Donovan Klingon, he is one of the best post players in the country. So that's my team. If you look at the regions that they come out of, Blake Lovell made a good post on this. Per KenPom, toughest region, East, at an aggregate score of KenPom, number 20, UConn 1, Auburn 4, Iowa State 5, Illinois 10. That is a tough regional. And by contrast, the weakest at 43 aggregate is the Midwest, Purdue 3, Tennessee 7, Creighton 11, Kansas 22. So we'll see how that all shakes down.
It's going to be fun. Looking forward to games, especially on Thursday and Friday, where you can watch them from about 11 a.m. until midnight here in the Central Time Zone.
Yep.
The ball is tipped, and there you are. Chris, always a lot of fun. Have fun. Enjoy the games, and we'll talk to you soon, man.
All right, buddy. Thanks.
He's Chris Dorch. I'm Kevin Ingram. That is the Blue Ribbon College Basketball Podcast. We'll talk to you soon.